Hare Krishna. Welcome. So, it is a couple of days away from Gita Jayanti. Gita Jayanti is the anniversary of when the Bhagavad Gita was first spoken, when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just before a huge battle. When did that happen? That this is the 5085th anniversary of the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita, to be exact. 5085th. Now, the actual speaking of the Bhagavad Gita anniversary is on Tuesday, which is Ekadashi. And the winter solstice is coming up on Friday, December 21st. The solstice...
It's for the cook in the kitchen.
Oh, for the cook in the kitchen. Well, okay then. I can't argue with that.
Okay.
Yeah, well then you can bring it closer for the cook. Who's cooking?
I'm on the other end of the cook.
Jai Prabhu, how's it going in the kitchen? Everything all right down there? Haribol. So, as I was saying, the winter solstice is on the 21st. Solstice, what is that? That's when the sun stops. Sol comes from the Latin, sun. And stis comes from the Sanskrit, stita. Stop, stand, stationary. So the sun has been traveling in its southern course, in his southern course now for 6 months. And he puts on the brakes, so to speak. And he begins his northern course. He's been traveling Dakshinayana for the past 6 months. And now he will begin his Uttarayana, his northern course, for the next 6 months. Very, very auspicious when the sun begins to travel in the north. And it is symbolically a rebirth. That's what it is. Because the days get longer for us in the northern hemisphere. The Australians, it's a little bit different for them down there. But for us, because we're here, the days will get longer. And the sun will travel... the sunrise will be 1 degree each day, roughly 1 degree each day, which will give us 1 minute more of daylight, theoretically. Now, if it is a celebration of a rebirth, which it is, isn't it interesting how the Bhagavad Gita was spoken just days before the Uttarayana, the solstice? And Krishna was here on the planet to paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chadushkritam, to get rid of the demoniac element, the dark forces, and to protect the devotees, the suras, the good people, the believers. And so that in effect is a rebirth, is it not? So it's interesting how no one's ever mentioned this to me before, so I thought it was kind of coincidental, like there is such a thing. As we know, there isn't. Now, it's interesting, too, that the Christians co-opted this day. Well, they didn't quite get it right, because they never get it quite right. So they like to co-opt pagan holy days. They've been doing that for, about 2,000 years now. And so they claim that Jesus was born on the 25th of December, which, shall we say, is doubtful at best. But that coincides with the solstice. So there you go. My talk today is entitled, Finding the Antidote to Death's Poison. And obviously... is going to come largely from the Bhagavad Gita. In celebration of this wonderful experience of Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita, which when I read it first time in 1972, my life changed. And it changed forever. And it never went back. It took me, I was going like this, and I went, I did a sharp turn. That was it. After I read the Bhagavad Gita, and here I sit, almost 50 years later, I guess that is, very close. Death. Suppose I hand you a glass and I say, here, drink this. What do you say to me? What's the first thing you're going to tell me?
What's in it?
What's in it? What is it? Aren't you? Sure you are. And I would then reply, it's poison, and you'll be dead in 3 minutes. Would you drink it? Show of hands, please. No hands are being raised. No volunteers for that experiment. Supposing I handed you a glass and you said, what's in it? And I said, it's poison and you'll be dead in about 62 years. Would you drink it then? Show of hands, please. One man. 62 years is good enough for him. Why? Because one way or the other, my friends, we're going to die a slow death. We're all dying a slow death. Aren't we? Because we drank from the chalice of repeated birth and death, didn't we? And here we are. Having drunk this poison, we are all headed for the ultimate end, which is death. Had you known before you came into this lifetime that it was going to lead toward your death, would you have signed up for this birth, my friends? Who would have signed up? I know, that's a pretty wide-ranging question. Who would have signed up for that? Yeah? One lady says, maybe. She's considering it. So, that's the reality we're in. Really. Now, let me put it differently to you. Suppose you go to an amusement arcade where they have the big video games and all the sounds and all the lights that will make you drive you bingo in about 5 minutes. Right? And you go in there and we have machine A and machine B. And there are, you know, exciting games and all the colors and the sounds and the lights and the computers, right? Now, machine A, whatever prizes you win, after you leave, you get to take them all home with you. That's machine A. Machine B, whatever prizes you win, when you're finished playing, you have to give them all back. You have to forfeit them and go home empty-handed. Which machine would you play? A. Anybody pick B? No. Well, my friends, you're playing machine B. That's the machine you chose. Because whatever prize you gain, whatever you've won, whatever you've acquired, whatever you've accumulated, whatever you have, you can't take it with you when you leave the amusement arcade, which is your life. Correct? Fooled again, weren't we? Fooled again. And is this our first go around? Oh no, my friends. Not even close. If you're sitting here and we're talking about this kind of subject matter, you've been around thousands of lifetimes. Many, many, many. Maybe millions. Don't know. And here we are, yet again, playing the same old song, yeah? Can you play that song again? I love that song, you know? I always say, I could listen to that song all night. So now let's talk about Bhagavad Gita. Because Bhagavad Gita was spoken to cure you of this tendency that you have to choose the wrong video game machine and to drink the cup of poison that's been offered to you repeatedly. So the Bhagavad Gita has essentially three subject matters. Essentially, we can break them down to three. And they are the steps, three steps, if you will, on the yoga ladder. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga. That's pretty much it. That's about as simplified as we could make it. Karma yoga is the yoga of action. In karma yoga, one acts in selfless duty to the Supreme. Sacrificing the fruits of your work, of your labors, of your actions, of your efforts to God, for God's pleasure. Why? This purifies you and releases you from material entanglement. Because karma means, as we know, action, reaction. Whatever you do, there is a reaction, and you must suffer or enjoy that reaction. In the same lifetime? Not likely. In the next life. That means you gotta drink the poison again, right? Jnana yoga, number two. Jnana yoga is the yoga of knowledge. You all know that. In jnana yoga, one gradually cultivates spiritual knowledge by philosophical reasoning. We use the brain. Exercising the intellect to differentiate between matter and spirit. There's matter, there's spirit. And why does everybody walk around? Because matter, the body, is being animated by spirit. What's the Latin for spirit? Anima. Animate. Right. Then, number three, bhakti, which is why we're here. This is the one that the yoga system that we lean toward here. Well, it's the one we practice. We do more than lean. Bhakti is the yoga of love and devotion. This is progressive, this yoga ladder. The highest rung being bhakti. The paths of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and including dhyana yoga, which is what? Dhyana means meditation. Are prescribed in various preliminary aspects to approach the ultimate goal of what? The ultimate goal is bhakti, selfless devotional love, love and devotion for God. If that's the goal, you see, karma yoga is something you do to get you to the goal. Jnana yoga is something you do to get you to the goal. Ashtanga yoga and pranayama and asana and pratyahara and yama, niyama and dhanana and etc. All those things, those are other things you do to get you to the goal. But if the goal is bhakti, is love and devotion, and the process and the goal are non-different, why not just do that? And not that we do not have a philosophical basis. Oh yes, we do.
It's very important to know what you're doing and why you're doing it. Otherwise, you'd be on the sentimental platform, as Prabhupada used to say all the time. You cannot be just sentimental. You have to know what you're doing and why you're doing it. So again, let's look at these briefly and say karma. Here's a quote, third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Work done as a sacrifice to Vishnu, to God, must be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. Therefore, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction. And in that way, you will always remain unattached and free from bondage. Everything you do creates a reaction. And that reaction is like a chain. Or you're being bound up. You're getting tied up with that reaction. So you have to come back one way or the other to enjoy your good karma. And people will say, yeah, well, why wouldn't I want to come back and enjoy my good karma? Because you're going to lose everything in death. That's already been established. That's why. So what we want to do is be able to transcend that. Jnana this verse, janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tattvataha tattvam daya punarjam janma naiti mam eti sorjuna. One who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities attains liberation. Liberation from what? Samsara, repeated birth and death. We get off the wheel of samsara. Those who take refuge in God, in Krishna, are purified by such knowledge and achieve love for him. That's why we cultivate knowledge, so we can understand God better. Who he is. Why would you want to develop a loving relationship with somebody you don't know? Do you normally do that? Do you fall in love with people you haven't met? Well, nowadays, with the internet, yeah, actually, we do. And I've been talking to him for 6 months, and he seems really nice, just chatting, you know, on the chat in texts. And we plan to Skype soon, so I can actually see who I'm speaking to. That'll be nice. And then he's going to come here. He's going to fly over and we'll get to meet. Wonderful. Is his wife coming too, or he's leaving her at home? Oh, am I exaggerating? I don't think so. It's hard to fall in love with somebody you don't know. Truly know. Same thing with God. In the Vedas, what we learn about God, what we learn about Krishna, is so voluminous. I mean, anything you want to know, it's there. So we're not asking you to fall in love with, oh, this energy, this ineffable, amorphous energy that we can't put our finger on. We're asking you to get to know God, what he's really like, what he looks like, what he likes to do, how he acts, how he behaves. If I ask the Christians, what's God's name? What? Huh? God doesn't have a name. Oh. Well, you have a name. Everybody else has a name. Why doesn't he have a name? Yeah. Well, names are a good start usually to relationships. Are they not? So what's your name? And off we go, right? You talk to somebody for 3 or 4 hours and never ask their name? Eh, maybe, on occasion. In the airport, perhaps. Right? Waiting for an airplane, maybe. Then, bhakti, briefly. The supreme principle of spirituality or dharma for each and every soul is voluntarily to surrender to Krishna and become his loving devotee. Voluntarily. Free will. Well, he's not going to force you? Could God force you? I would assume he could force you to do pretty much anything. But he doesn't. Because that's not love. Love doesn't work with forcing. We see this in the newspaper, on the news. When one who loves the other, who claims to love the other, forces them, and they don't yield to that force, terrible things happen sometimes. Terrible things. Right? You can't force. God does not force. Krishna does not force. At the conclusion of his teachings, Krishna, end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna to abandon all temporary dharmas. What dharmas? Well, we know dharma is social duties, religious performances, and methods of spiritual elevation and spiritual development, and simply surrender with love unto him. Well, I'm going to surrender to somebody I don't know? No. Why would you? That would be foolish. That's why you have to get to know him. That's why you have to enter into a relationship, develop the relationship over a period of time, and actually get to know him and feel and experience his reciprocation with you. Not because I say so. What I say doesn't mean anything unless you tangibly can experience that in your life. Right? Bhakti, therefore, is the ultimate and highest purpose of the soul. Even while still materially embodied, the soul can meditate on Krishna, worship him, glorify him, serve him, and thus attain divine love for him. So, we don't necessarily have to wait till we're dead. We can do it now. And as I said earlier, bhakti is the goal and the process. That's why it's different from other forms of yoga. Because these other forms of yoga, such as karma and jnana, once you reach the goal, which is moksha, in most cases is moksha. It is liberation from repeated birth and death, then you stop doing the yoga. Correct? Why would you need to do it anymore? Do you not turn off your car when you reach your destination? Park it someplace? So, with bhakti, once you reach the destination, you just keep doing what you're doing in your loving relationship to Krishna. Okay, now let's talk about death. The antidote. What is the antidote to death's poison? So we find out from the Bhagavad Gita, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Dosha Nudarshanam. Prabhupada quoted this verse, I don't know how many times, countless times. Countless times. So we have a anudarshanam, a notion, a perception. And it is a faulty perception. Dosha means mistake or fault or flaw. It is a flawed notion that janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, and dukkha, these are somehow good things. What are they? Janma is birth. Mrityu is death. Jara is old age. Vyadhi is illness. And dukkha is suffering. Sign me up. I'll go for that. And here we are. And that's what we experience here in the material world. And none of us wants this. So, now I want to speak mostly just about the antidote to death. And we're looking at the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita primarily. Antakale chamameva smaran muktva kalevaram yat prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra sangshayaha. Now, this gives it to you in one little statement, my friends. If you can do this, you're home free. If you can do what I'm about to tell you. And whoever, at the end of his life, quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this, there is no doubt. At the moment of death, it all comes down to the moment of death. You think I'm going on about death because I'm morbid? No, I'm not, believe me. I'm going on about it because it is the most important moment. Have you heard of peak experiences? Have you heard this term? Peak experience. Birth, go to the other end. Death. In between, marriage maybe, orgasm, that's a popular one, birth of your child, peak experience, bungee jumping, I guess, for some, might be, various kinds, but birth and death. Right? Those are the bookends. So, if you, whatever goes through your mind at the point of death, that's why, my friends, believe me, you want to be conscious when you die. You don't want to be drugged down. Now, if you're in pain, God bless you. I understand that may happen. You don't want to be drugged down. You want to be compos mentis. You want to be able to think as clearly as possible, whatever that means, so that you can think of Krishna at the time of death. So why do we start now? Because it takes practice. And death, as we know, can be a terrifying experience for a lot of people. And you may think, as we sit here nice and peacefully and comfortably, that, oh, we will have our wits about us at the point of death. Will we? I don't know, you see. Some people are there in coma, you know. There's different ways to die. Some people die in an accident. It goes very quickly. Souls who die in accidents, sudden, unexpected accidents, many times don't even know that they died. It's such a shock that they keep wandering around. They think they're still alive. I can give you stories to prove it, but I won't get into that today. So we need to practice meditating on Krishna so that when death comes, we are accustomed to it, we're comfortable with it, and we have a relationship with Krishna. Why would you meditate on somebody with whom you have no relationship? Why would you? Who do people meditate on at death typically? Tell me. Who?
Their family.
Their loved ones. The wife, the husband, the child, whomever. Whomever they're closest to. That's who they meditate on. Some people meditate on what they own, their stuff. You know, this, how's it going? He who dies with the most toys wins. Have you heard that one? Yeah. Well, I lived in America, so we know that one. He who dies with the most toys wins. And toys means whatever it is you own, those are your toys. Wins what? you just died. You lost. And you lost all your toys. And your family are going to fight over your toys in the courts. Can you imagine? You wouldn't have accumulated so many toys had you known your family would be fighting over them after you were gone. Now would you? Not my claim. So, the moment of death, extremely important. Then he says, again, chapter 8, Krishna says, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna. Now, Prabhupada has told us many times, he said, well, you know, if you're not attracted to Krishna, the most attractive form of the Godhead, and you have another form of God that you are attracted to, then you should meditate on the form of God you're attracted to. If you're attracted to Allah, then you should meditate on Allah, or Sri Ram, or Chaitanya, or Varaha, or whomever you're attracted to. So he says, therefore you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, because this is Krishna talking. And at the same time, carry out your prescribed duty. This is for you. Yeah, he's talking to Arjuna. It's for you. Think of him in the form of Krishna and carry out your prescribed duty. Whatever you're supposed to do, you go ahead and do it. I'm not telling you to stop doing. Don't stop. You know, stop desire. Sit still. Meditate 25 hours a day. Clear your mind, you know. Yeah. Good luck with that if you've tried it. It's very difficult. No, you just go about your business and meditate on Krishna. Make him your partner. Make him your friend. When I drive, I put him in the passenger seat. Hey, Krishna, how's it going? If I'm driving in America, I go, hey, Krishna, how's it going? You spend which country I'm in. Right? Or you can imagine him driving your chariot as you go down the street. He's driving. And you're just riding. Getting the bow in the arrow ready for the next task at hand. He's your man. That's what he wants you to do. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. Now he says again, without doubt. Nasangshaya. And then he said in the previous verse, Nasangshaya. Without doubt. Don't give it a second thought. I will be there for you. I will not forsake you. If you do not forsake me, I will not forsake you. What do you call that? Friendship. Don't you? Isn't that the kind of bond you want with pretty much everybody in your life that's important to you? That you want them to be there for you? Not just in good times. That's easy. In the difficult times, when things are hard, huh? And will you be there for them when they go through their difficulty? Right? Krishna's saying, I'll be there. Have no doubt. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. Yeah, you're going to lose everything, guaranteed. All your toys, all your stuff, as we've been speaking about, it's all going to be gone. And theoretically, you'll be left empty-handed. Krishna's saying, no, you won't be left empty-handed at all. you will then have the greatest reward in all of your existence. I'll be with you. That's what he's saying. Again, 15th verse. Abrahma bhuvanau loka punar avartinorjuna mam upetya tukamteya punar janma na vidyate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O Arjun, never takes birth again. Punar janma na vidyate. Never takes birth again. That's what you're being offered here. Eternal life. That's video game A, where you get to take home everything with you, as mentioned at the beginning. I don't mean your toys. I mean everything of value. Everything of real meaning in your life. And what's the most meaningful thing in anyone's life? Is it a thing? Or is it an emotional experience that opens the heart? Is it love? What's more valuable? Love. Because that's what you're all chasing around looking for. We all are. And every time we look into a face, whether you realize it or not, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for love, but first you're looking for recognition. Does that person see me? Do they get me? Do they see my essence? Does that person understand me? Would that person appreciate me? Would I appreciate that person? Could we have a meaningful exchange? That's what you're looking for. Even when you don't think like that, unconsciously, believe me, that's what you're looking for. We all are. Right? That place which is described as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, Krishna speaking here, that is my supreme abode. Well, wait a second. He says it's unmanifest. Sounds kind of subtle to me. Unmanifest, yeah, it's not material. It's not mundane. It's not subject to what? Falling apart, diminishment, disintegration, aging, dilapidation. It's not subject to any of that because it's transcendental. Right? So he says, that's my supreme abode. This is chapter 8, verse 21. In Prabhupada, a little bit of the purport. Prabhupada says, here the supreme abode of the personality of Godhead Krishna is described in the Brahma Sanghita as the Chintamani Dham. Dham means abode and Chintamani means touchstone. It's a touchstone. It's like a stone that, a stone, like a gemstone, but a stone that delivers anything and everything you could imagine or hope for. And it's pure, and it's perfect, and it's complete. A place where all desires are fulfilled, Prabhupada says. The supreme abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, is full of palaces made of touchstone. There are also trees called desire trees. What's the term? Kopa Vriksha. That supply any type of eatable upon demand, and there are cows known as Serbi cows, which supply a limitless supply of milk, not just milk, pretty much anything you want. In this abode, the Lord is served by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune, Lakshmis. You would just like to get 5 minutes with Lakshmi, so you could talk to her and tell her, give her the list. I've been good. Can you show Santa all this, please? Because this is what I want this year from Santa. Lakshmi, please. Can you organize that for me? Krishna doesn't do that. He just got hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis just hanging out with him. Why? Because he's irresistible. He's all attractive. They want to be around him all the time. Lakshmi is the goddess of fortune for those who do not know who she is. He is called Govinda. He is the original Lord and the cause of all causes. My favorite statement. Cause of all causes. Sarva Karana Karanam. The Lord enjoys playing his flute. Venum Kvanantam Aravinda Dalayataksham. Lotus eyes. His eyes are like lotus petals, and the color of his body is like the color of dark clouds. Had a lot of them lately here. Ireland's a great place for dark clouds, which will remind you of Krishna. Either that or you'll be cursing and cussing because you're getting pelted by the rain. But that's a separate thing. He is so attractive that his beauty excels that of thousands of cupids. Yeah, is there such a thing as a cupid? Oh, yes, there is. There is a cupid. There is a demigod. That's Cupid. Well, they don't call him Cupid. They call him Madana. And Krishna, they call Madana Mohan. Because Madana means a form of madness. When you are struck with love and you fall in love, why doesn't anybody rise in love is what I'm wondering. Why does everybody fall down the rabbit hole into love? I think there's something wrong with that concept. You get struck by Cupid's arrow, which, by the way, is not a sharp arrow, it's a flower arrow. It's a pushpa. I have a beautiful carving from India of his wife, Rati, with a bow, and she's pointing up like this, shooting flower arrows all over the place. So we get struck with a madness, a kind of madness when we fall in love, don't we? We start walking, what is it, 3 inches above the ground, Gary? How many inches is it now? All right? And the birds are singing, even when the midwinter, which is impossible. And the sun is shining, even when it's pouring rain. That's how you feel. Right? That's Madana. That's when you're struck by that madness of love. Right? But Krishna is Madana Mohan. Oh. He's the guy who creates illusion for Mr. Madana. He puts him into illusion. Ooh, I like that. So I'm going to go with the Madana Mohan myself, which is Krishna. Okay. He wears saffron cloth, a garland around his neck, and of course, a peacock feather in his hair. I love these peacock feather baubles. Did you make those? Those are great. I'd love some of those. Okay. The yogis who meditate on the Supreme Brahman, Spirit, God as energy, attain that supreme by passing away from the world. This is still the 8th chapter. This is Bhagavad Gita. They attain that supreme spirit. They merge into the oneness of that spirit. Okay? That is the first level of God realization. We know that, right? During the influence of the fire god in the light at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, and during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north, the Uttarayana. For those of you who came in late, you missed that part of the talk. But the solstice begins, solstice means sun stands still. And then he begins his northern course for the next 6 months, and the day gets longer. That's called the Uttarayana. Right? So, for a yogi who's trying to orchestrate, some yogis can choose their moment of death. They have the siddhis in which to do that, the mystical abilities to do that, correct? And if they do, this is when you exit, my friends. Do Krishna devotees worry about that? No. Why? Because we leave it to Krishna. He says, Natsanchaya, don't worry. I'll take care of it. He already said that. So you don't have to orchestrate it. But this is interesting. Because that means you got to die. If you're going to leave your body and not come back, you have to leave your body during the day, during the Shukla Paksha, the bright fortnight when the moon is waxing, getting bigger, and during the 6 months when the sun is in his northern course, which begins on Friday at the solstice. Then you don't come back. So those of you who want to orchestrate that, and that's a little tip Krishna's giving you here. So can we surmise from that that somebody who dies and those stipulations are not met will be back? I think so. I believe so. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is a great verse. Itavan Sankhya Yoga Vyam Sarva Dharma Parinishtaya Janmalaba Parapunsang Ante Narayana Smriti. So again, in a whole different scripture of the Vedas, this statement that I made at the beginning of talking about the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is said again in a different way. The highest perfection of human life, achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by practice of mystic powers, or by the perfect discharge of occupational duty. Mystic powers is Ashtanga Yoga. Perfect discharge of occupational duty is Karma Yoga. Complete knowledge of matter and spirit is Jnana Yoga. It is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. Ante Narayana Smriti. At ante and at the end, Smriti, he remembers Narayana, God. That's it again. The moment of death is everything. Very important. And another verse from 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrataha, Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja, Yanti Madhyajina Opima. Those who worship the demigods will take their next birth among the demigods. What are demigods? Those are the ones who control the universe. If you can't wrap your mind around the idea of a demigod, then why don't we call them angels and archangels? It is the same thing. It is higher beings in heavenly planets. These are the earthly planets. Earth is part of the earthly or middle planets, planetary system. There is a heavenly planetary system. This is not heaven like the spiritual world. It's heavenly planetary systems with heavenly planets where you go for your rewards when you've been a good person and you're meant to enjoy good karma and you have some consciousness, you have some spiritual awareness. They'll shoot you up to a few planets. Much, much nicer than Earth, my friends. I know you love Earth, but you're going to have to take my word on this one. And by the same token, there are hellish planets way down below. Do I advise you visit those? Not even as a tourist. Now, I know sometimes Ryanair goes there. But when they do, I assure you it's by mistake. And when they land, it's not anywhere near the city you're trying to get to, okay?
Or the haunted house.
Or the haunted house. Exactly. She's been on Ryanair. What can I tell you? So, those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship ghosts and spirits... What? Yes. The voodoo people will take birth among the ghosts and spirits. Those who worship the ancestors, I just want to be with my granddad. I want to be with my dad. I want to be with my mom. We were so close. Yeah, okay, that can be organized. Mind you, your mother is a short man living in India now, but that might be rough, but or organize a birth there for you. Never know. And those who worship me, Krishna, will come and live with me. So, where do you want to go? When you book a flight, the first thing they ask you, booking online, on the phone, what do they say? Where are you going? Don't they? You put in your destination, where are you from, where are you going to, pick your dates, off we go. Same idea. Where do you want to go? Oh, I want to go with the spooks. No. You want to go to God. Why? Because it's the only place from which you will not come back, my friends. That is the antidote to death's poison. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Questions? I guess I covered it.
They're not spook like if you went to spook, you'd go back to planet Earth.
Yes. You hang out with the spooks, you might actually be down there, but then you'll come back at some point. You'll come back to Earth in another earthly body, yes.
Okay, and the only way...
But the reason you're going to the spooks is because you're meditating on them. That wouldn't be that pleasant. Anyway, would it?
If anyone doesn't go to heaven, if you go anywhere else, they may have to come back.
Yes, because the earthly realm is the best opportunity to get off the wheel of repeated birth and death.
Right.
The human form, like we have, my friends, is the optimum opportunity to get out of here, to get out of prison. This is prison. Oh, I don't think it's prison. Well, you're on death row. Hello. You drank the poison, only you got the 62-year sentence. 3 meals a day? What do they say? 3 hots and a cot? Right? No. Get out. When? This lifetime. No, I don't mean get out. I mean get out this lifetime. Stop wasting time.
What are the main reasons why we keep on choosing to come back? Because we just said we've been here so many times.
Yeah, well, let's take a poll. Now, here's the best question yet. Why are you still here, Emily? Why are you still here, Antoinette?
Because we're only young.
Because you're what?
Because we're only young.
Oh, you're a young soul and here you sit? I don't think so.
I do answer.
Why?
A few more things to work on.
A few more things to work on. Excellent answer. Very good. Ashok? Gary? Anybody else? Pravesh? What?
Have some karma to pay.
Have some karma to pay?
To make music?
Well, you can't make music anywhere else but here?
Here and everywhere.
Yeah, okay, why don't we raise it up a little bit? You know how rough it is here? Let me give you... I was driving here. It's a long drive. And I was meditating, and this is what came to me. This world is such a difficult place that people have breakdowns. They have nervous breakdowns. They have mental breakdowns. They suffer from melancholy, depression, sadness, despondency, loss. Right? Sometimes they just can't even relate to their existence in this world. Right? Reasonable statement for many people? Okay. Well, think about it now. This is what came to me. You're a soul. You are a soul. You're encased in the body. We're all souls. What is the subtlest thing, the subtlest substance there is? It's spirit. The soul is pure spirit. Correct? So there's a soul. If we're looking at an octave or a wavelength or a frequency, it's way, way, way up here, correct? Now, the soul is going to take a body, be brought down onto this frequency of the physical plane, onto this wavelength. You follow me? So, here's the soul coming down. The first covering, the soul gets covered by various bodies or substances. The first one is ahankara, ego. First covering. Second covering is buddhi, intelligence. Third covering is manas, mind. Those three are your subtle body covering the soul. Next, we go into the gross elements and you get covered by ether or space. The next element you get covered by is air. The next is fire. The next is water. And the final one is earth. If you don't believe me now, you can look in the mirror in your earthen form. Each is a different degree of density. Heavier and heavier and slower and denser until you reach earth. Right? And you're wondering why sometimes you can't cope? Is that a big surprise when you've accumulated all this gunk on your way down? No, my friends. You have no business being here. None whatsoever. Sorry. And the sooner you realize that, the better we're all going to be. Does that make sense?
Do you think we've been here a few hundred years almost?
A few hundred times? Oh yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we just keep... Yeah, can I get a ticket, please? You know how they give you a ticket when you go to wait and accuse them? Number 3,427,062. Yeah, that's me. What are you, you're here again? Didn't you learn last time? No. I thought there was something special on offer. No, it's the same old thing, man. Why do you keep coming back? What's wrong with you? Slow to learn or what? Huh? I tease you. I know. It's good for you. It'll make you think of it and smile and then go home and cry. No, I'm just kidding. We gotta get off the wheel. Enough. Enough. This is my Christmas present to you. Get off the wheel. I don't know if that answered your question, but...
I think you're saying that the body, the intelligence is very important to actually make the right decision.
Yeah. It's important, but we don't want mundane intelligence. We want transcendental intelligence. You know, what good is having intelligence? If you got a problem or you have a conundrum or you're stuck in a circumstance and your intelligence can't get you out, what's the value of that intelligence? That's not intelligence. That's intelligence that's covered over by some kind of illusion or misdirected intelligence. No?
Patience.
Pardon?
Patience. You need to have patience with yourself.
Yes, you should have patience with yourself. Of course. I don't mean you should treat yourself harshly. I never advocate that. You know, as you forgive others, you must also forgive yourself. It's important. I don't go home and whip yourself with a cat of nine tails. No. It's not what I'm saying. I'm trying to wake you up gently. Open the aperture a little wider. Jeev Jago. Wake up, spirit soul. Jeev Jago. That's the Mangla Bhasha.
Can I ask you a big question?
Yeah.
Is a long life always a sign of good karma?
Yes. A long life is considered to be good karma. And, you know, rishis and sadhus, they'll ayushmantam bhava. They'll wish you long life. A long life means that you have all those years to work through your karma and to learn your lessons and to develop your consciousness and evolve. So, whereas an untimely death, cut short, as we know, as we say, is not good karma. Because it's, you know, it's a wasted birth in that sense. Now, there are exceptions to that. When sometimes a child will be born who's a high soul and their life is cut short at a very young age because they've now finished off their karma. That can be there too. But that's not the norm. That would be, you know, more of a rare circumstance. Yeah. Are we good? Yeah.
So, yeah.
Go ahead.
So in some place, like I think Srila Prabhupada said devotee doesn't mind to come back to the world again and again to serve. So
yeah.
Some attachment. At the same place, Srila Prabhupada said we should decide to go back to Godhead in one lifetime. So both are fine.
Both are fine. If you want to come back and serve and help others, wonderful. Prabhupada, I remember he said one time that But Dandiki, he said, yeah, I'm willing to come back. He wanted to come back and help some more. Well, that's him, you know. That's true to his nature. But he says, but if that's the case, I want to be born in a Brahmin family in India. That's what he says. I want to be in a Brahmin family. I don't want to be born in a Vaishya family, in a mercantile family. I want to be born in a Brahmin family because... I think it's because his experience was he didn't get a lot. He didn't get respect from a lot of the Brahmins in India. Some he did, and some he didn't. You know, because he wasn't a Brahmin. And those of you who understand that culture know that that's very, very true. Can be. So.
Can you finally explain for us also karma yoga if it is?
Which?
Karma yoga, you talk about karma.
Karma yoga means whatever it is you do, you're offering it to God. So you keep doing what you're doing, but everything is being offered to God. And so if everything you're doing is for yourself or for your family, for example, then you're the enjoyer. You think you're the enjoyer, it's for me and mine. And it has a reaction. Whatever action it is, it has a reaction. And if you offer it to God, there is no reaction. That's what karma yoga is. And you will not accumulate positive and negative karma. If you accumulate positive or negative karma, you must come back to experience that karma. And even you experience, and that's what people argue, yeah, but I like good karma. Yeah, but it's still going to end in death. That's the point.
You're still here.
You're still here. You're still in the material world. Yes.
Isn't God everything? So
God is everything.
So in a sense that God is your family, God is your friends, God is...
That's the second level of God realization, Paramatma realization, to see the divine spark in everyone. Correct. But not be attached to them. And that's why in our society we refer to each other as Prabhu. Prabhu means the God. That divine spark. It's not like we're calling each other God. That's not the concept. The concept is we're recognizing the divine nature in each person. That's the concept.
So you're attached to the spirit more than the physical nature?
Yes. We like to look at you that you are a soul, part and parcel of God. And it's not that we're ignoring you as a man and who you are and, you know, what your nature is. We don't ignore that. But we see past that. Because in the material world, the perception is we see a person and we make all kinds of judgments. How quickly? Instantly. Oh, and this one's like this, this one's like that. Oh, well, no, I don't even go near those people. You know. And some, if we're too prejudicial, we won't even give somebody a chance, you know. Because what do we see? We see differences. I'm different than you. Well, this guy's different than me. He doesn't have this, he doesn't do that. Or this car's better than mine. Or whatever, you know. What's that got to do with anything? The essence is inside. It's the soul. That's what we're trying to see. How do you see the soul if you don't know somebody? The easiest way to see the soul is look in their eyes. Look in their eyes. You can read so much from a person just by looking in their eyes in a few seconds. You can. You should be able to look at anybody right in the eyes and determine immediately whether that person is trustworthy or not. You think I'm exaggerating? I'm not. Yeah, some people are good at covering it up or putting on a show, a mask. No, no. You can see through all that. You can see the truth. When you look, you must penetrate. You must penetrate the veil. You must penetrate the veils, my friend. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to penetrate all these veils to and get to the truth. Yes, I can appreciate you and all your forms and your personalities. Wonderful. But I want to see you for your eternal essence. That's the most important thing of all. Who you are temporarily, you'll be somebody else in the next life. So, you know, we recognize it, we respect it, but what validity does it have? If you're living for 60, 70 years, boom, you're gone. That's nothing. You think that's, oh, I've lived a very long life, 75 years. It's nothing. I'm interested in you as a soul, as an eternal being. Because that's who you really are. This is all a phantasmagoria down here. And we think, oh, this is important, and that's important. And the Prime Minister said this, and, you know, we're doing Brexit, and I don't know if we're doing Brexit or the hard border, but you know, you'll be doing Brexit for in your next lifetime. I don't want to come back for that either. I just want to exit, not Brexit.
Very good. Very good.
All right? Hare Krishna.